please, for Monday's morning show, beginning just after 8.
Support comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Budget a little tight? The agency can help save money on prescriptions, utilities, Medicare costs, and groceries. Boost your budget. Call to see if you qualify. 262-605-6646. Free and confidential.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, and I'm very happy to welcome Mayor David Magdala to our program today. Find out about your first days, weeks in office as Kenosha Mayor, and what's going on with various projects in the area. So welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Jane. It's been going great. I do feel like you are drinking from a fire hose at times. I think some of my staff has been worried that I've been doing too much because it feels like we don't have time for a whole lot of things. But at the same time, I feel it's been very productive. We've been getting a lot of things done, meeting with all of the staff and from department heads on down. I think one of the things that I really wanted to do in the first several weeks is spending time with the staff and sitting and meeting with all of the departments and talking about, and whether that's, you know, the seasonal folks in parks, the men and women in waste, and talking to them about, hey, what are your concerns? What are your issues? And how can we as an administration make your jobs easier? And by extension, by making the experience better for our citizens. And that's really what I've been spending a lot of time on the last few weeks, along with meeting with a number of developers and various things and projects, one that we've already been had in the pipeline and working on. But there's a lot of folks who are now very interested in Kenosha. And so we've been having some conversation with some of them as well.
Which is always exciting. Let's take some of those pieces apart and start talking about them. You were a longtime alderman. Was it 17 years?
16.
Yeah. And then now you're meeting with some of these people who you probably knew before, but you're in a different position. How are those relationships and communications going? Are they more guarded? Are they more, this is what I need, thank you for coming?
I think because I've had the relationships, it's actually been fairly easy. The roles are totally different, and I've made that very clear as I've sat down and talked with all the staff. Being a part-time alderman and having a full-time job and, you know, coming in and doing the things you need to get done, you know, it's a little bit more demand. The demands are much different. You don't have the time and, you know, the energy to go through, hey, listen, my constituents called about X. I want X, you know, taken care of. And so now, you know, in this role, obviously it's very much different. You're really kind of, you know, setting the tone. Ensuring that, number one, that yes, those citizens are getting what they deserve, what they expect. That's always got to be forefront of our minds. But now, on the flip side, it's making sure that our staff have the tools and training and personnel to do what they need to do. And so you have to balance those two, but keeping the citizens at the forefront of everything we do. I think that was in my very first staff meeting I had, I think after the first week, is said, you know, it's important we remember always who we work for. You know, where it's not for shareholders, it's not for, you know, those kinds of things, but it's for the citizens. They expect a certain level of customer service. They expect a certain level of service provided. I think we do an outstanding job in many areas. It's something they expect us to continue, and that's what we've been focused on.
Are you finding that perhaps communication is one of the biggest issues, both between administration and employees and between citizens and the city?
Oh, for sure. And again, sometimes it's just style. I mean, my style is very much different than Mayor Ant Dreamon. He was the kind of person that, I mean, again, the guy was a genius. And we are such a much more better community because of him. But some of the things, again, just stylistically, I came from a manufacturing background. You know, I worked at my company for 26 years, and I recognize, you know, listen, I said it in the first day that I was there, I'll never ask you to do something I wouldn't do myself. And if that means coming up, picking up a broom, riding alongside in a truck, doing whatever needs to be done, I'm going to do that. And number two, it's okay to say I don't know. And I think when you set those two ground rules, I think you have a much more cooperative a deal that you've essentially made. And I think I've noticed that. And so they've seen that over the last, you know, month or so as I've been in office, is really making sure that I understand, you know, fully on the details. But I'm not afraid to roll my sleeves up and get in the middle of whatever it is. I know the role, you know, is a little bit different. But I think the communication has been there. I mean, I've already had people saying, well, I've never gotten an email from the mayor before, because that was not Mayor Ant Dreamon style. But I, you know, for me, it's just, hey, I want to make sure they know exactly how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what I think we need to be focused on, and then how I can help them achieve whatever goals they have.
You've talked about citizens being number one and, of course, trying to work with staff and being number one. Probably the third leg of that stool is money to do it with. How are you right now? I imagine you're developing the budget. And how are you taking the things that you're hearing and try to mix that into what it's going to cost to get there?
Well, that's always the, you know, when you start having these initial meetings, just like you would expect, is everybody's going, okay, we got a new person here. Here's the 10 things that we need. And so we have had some of that discussion. But I think, you know, one of the things that I think has been helpful is, again, spending time with each and every employee. And you find that sometimes there's things that we can do for them that actually don't cost any money. They're just things that we haven't looked at in years or in decades in some cases, and we've kind of realigned our priorities to make things easier for them to get things done, to service our citizens that much easier and more efficient. And so I've already, you know, there's been a number of different departments who have said, you know, we want to do it this way, and I always tell them, I'm going to ask you, why have we done it that way? And if your answer is, well, that's the way we've always done it, chances are I'm going to want to change it. So we've gone through a number of those types of things out that are more on the efficiency side to try to help them be better than what we're doing right now without having to, you know, break the bank and actually, you know, work on the budget. We just put together our timeline for the budget. So departments are all working on those right now. And so, again, it's been a long summer of back and forth and discussions and how we need to do that. But it's helpful for me, again, when I sit down with them and have those discussions. When you've been out there riding in a truck or, you know, sitting out in the field, you have a much better feel for it. Yeah, you know what? Boy, we really do need to figure out a way to invest in headcount here or there or move some different things around. And so we're already seeing that is definitely something that we may need to do.
One of the things that many of us have experienced is see our valuation of our homes go way up. And I'm sure your office and many at the city have received calls about, oh my, does that mean my taxes are going to go sky high? And here you want to add people and blah. What do you think is really going to be happening there?
Well, I think it was actually the first meeting I had with Mayor Ant Dreamon and Mr. Morrissey was, oh, by the way, assessments are going to be coming due, and by the way, they're going to probably be pretty high. And I said, oh, thank you very much. so we right away started putting together some communications to go out. And again, that's you mentioned it earlier about communication. That's something that's a high priority for me. We've already given the green light for social media, which was not something that was my predecessor was fond of, but we're already doing that now. We're looking to expand that. We actually have an intern that's working in our office from Carthage. She does marketing, and she's put together a number of different communications that I think have been very, very positive and helpful. So on the assessment side, yes. We haven't done assessments since 2018, so it's been a little while. COVID interrupted that. We had some headcount issues in that area, so that prolonged it, and now we're doing it. So really, yeah, it's one, the market is what it is, mm-hmm. and it's considerably higher. Inventories are low, and so you know if you were to sell your home today, you're probably going to get 5 or 6 offers, you know, by the time you hang up with the phone, over asking price. So some of that is attributed to those characteristics. One of the things I think is important for folks to recognize, and I've talked about this over the last month, is there's not a one-to-one correlation assessments to what your tax rate's going to be. We need to make sure, number one, that we put together a responsible budget. I feel very confident that we will do that. But there's other taxing entities that are also in that equation, which I can't speak for. Gateway being one, Kenosha Unified, and of course the county. So once that all comes together, more than likely you're going to see a drop in the mill rate. And so for the vast majority of people who might have a higher than expected assessment, you're not going to actually see a tax increase. Now, again, we have to figure out what everybody's budgets are. We have to be responsible with those budgets. I think we've done a good job over the last, several years of putting together responsible budgets, the last administration approved by the council. And we're going to continue on that path.
Jumping away from that just a bit, because you had mentioned developers and you're working with them, that has an effect as well on taxes. They, especially if they're not in a tax incremental financing district, you actually get taxes mm-hmm. from them. How does that figure into allowing the city perhaps to raise its budget and give better services, but not impact the standard homeowner?
Well, that's definitely will be helpful. And as I said, we've been having some discussions with a number of developers who've first approached the city, just in the last couple of weeks, and they're very excited about Kenosha. Some of them are looking for some type of financial assistance. Some are not. Obviously, the ones that are not are much more advantageous for us to look at. So it's something we have to, again, it's just the right balance. But, what a lot of folks have to recognize, we're in a very competitive market right now. The southeastern Wisconsin right now is really the hotbed, and Kenosha's at the center of all of that. And folks who are wanting to come here, whether they're from Illinois or other parts of the country and around the globe, we're actually have a manufacturer that's actually just getting ready to kick off between the tracks south of 60th Street. Mm. And they are a German manufacturing company. They'll be the first and largest plastics manufacturing that they have in the United States. So we're not only getting, attention from, the region, we're getting attention from the world. And so, yeah, it's become very competitive. And so we have to do what we can to help where we can. And, in other cases, just say this is not the right fit for us. And move on. So I've been spending a lot of my time in the last couple of weeks.
It sounds pretty exciting. And like you say, it seems like everything is on a growth platform right now for Kenosha. And do you see anything on the horizon that might shift us, things that we have to worry about happening, outside influences?
Well, there's always outside influences. I mean, things are happening around the globe. I mean, that's what I've done in my career the last, 26 years, particularly the last 7, is really looking at what's happening around the globe and how it impacts us. We've seen what happens when a global pandemic, impacts. There's wars that are going on, in multiple places around the globe. Those obviously have lasting impacts. The economy, again, overall seems to be weathering the storm right now. I think when you talk to developers, they'd like to see interest rates come down a little bit more to make it a little bit easier on the cost of construction that they have. So I'm hopeful that is. But if that doesn't, or if that goes in the opposite direction, you might start to see a bit of a slowdown. So, again, there are certain things that are out of our control that we'll continue to work with our peers in the state and then the federal government, and hopefully they can – keep things pointed in the right direction.
And I'm sure those same type of outside influences have some sort of influence on some of the major projects that are already started. And I'd like to get kind of a status report, if
sure.
I could, from those. First would be the downtown. That's been in the works for so many years, and I know we lost developers, and then we lost developers, and now we have developers. Is there really going to be stuff happening?
Absolutely. We're in fact, we met with the developers last week. They're ready to go. They're excited to go. We're working on some final agreements that should be coming forward, I would say, probably. We have a council meeting, I think, on July 1st. I think we're looking at probably that for final approval for the developers agreement there. For the first building, it's a 158-unit apartment building. That'll go there.
Where would that be located?
That is what's called Parcel I. So if you're thinking about downtown, the former Chase Bank drive-through area there, you'll probably start to see – you've already seen some of the underground work that's kind of started there. You'll probably start to see that coming down and some of the work there. There's some sewer work that needs – there's actually one that runs directly through that property that's going to need to be redone. So that's going to start taking place. I would anticipate probably sometime middle to late July is when you start to see that. And I would expect probably sometime either late August or early September you actually see some footings and building going up there. So we're on track. Again, like to see it go a little bit quicker, but I think we all would. But that's the nature of development. It's not a fast process. It's slow and methodical, and people want to make sure that we got our ducks in a row, and I think we're on the right track.
I think everybody wants ducks in a row, but it is so frustrating when you think, has anything happened yet? And that, for instance, the building coming down, people have a lot of different names for it, the old police station, 56th and Sheridan. What's going to go there? Is that still supposed to be the new city hall?
That is still slated right now as a new city hall. That's what we consider Block E or Parcel E. And the hope is that I don't think you'll see anything there on that until maybe sometime late 26, 27, before we actually see that. We need to get some of these other properties up and going.
Those that probably generate some tax income.
So we need to get that going first. And I think we'll get those first two buildings, maybe a third one going before we tackle City Hall. But that is still something that is definitely on the radar, something I want to see because I think, number one, the site where City Hall currently is sitting it's such an amazing, marketable site. It's the best view anywhere in Kenosha.
You do have a fine view from that office.
Nothing better than walking in the morning and looking out that window and seeing
over the harbor.
It's
yes,
just amazing. So be sad to see that, but I think in terms of what that can do, what I like to call Kenosha's front yard, I think we have an opportunity to really remake what that front yard looks like over the course of the next 5 to 7 years, and so I'm very excited about it.
Moving on to the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, finally the great big round cement circles have disappeared, I imagine, underground where they belong.
Yep.
What's next?
Well, we're cutting the roads in. You can see that and some of that. I think it's 28th Avenue and then 55th Street, I think, are the two streets that they're cutting in. So that's in process right now. We do have the first two buildings which are in process. Number one, the first building is the Kenosha Tech School, which is going in there. That's the first one. That one is slated to be completed already sometime in the first quarter of next year.
Oh, great.
And then you have the Kenosha Innovation Center, which is directly next to that. That's under construction right now. That got started. And so I think that one's probably more late 25 before that is ready to go.
And what will that be all about again?
So the innovation centers, it's really, again, a number of partners that we have. All of the schools are part of that: Gateway, Parkside, Carthage, all have pieces to that. really what you think about is, again, and this is kind of the whole kind of what the vision of what we see for Kenosha is maintaining the our young people here in this community so that they actually have, you know, that path for them. You know, you go back 50 years, you know, 60 years ago, you know, somebody knew, hey, I was born here. I knew I was going to get a great job working, you know, for the motors or some facet of that. They knew they were going to be able to, you know, have a find a house that was, you know, an affordable house for them to start their family, raise their family, go to great schools. And now we're kind of in a different. We don't have that anymore. So now, how do we ensure that those next types of jobs for the 21st century are going to be there for those young people so they don't go to California or Texas or wherever, you know, some of those technology hubs are? I think we have the ability here with the Innovation Center to build upon what we've been doing, which is, and I move over to the south, over into the KELA, the Kenosha Emerging Leaders Academy, and the work that we're doing there as sort of the catalyst for these young people to, you know, okay, start figuring out what is it that I really want to do and how we can help cultivate that those ideas for them. And then by the time we get to the Kenosha Innovation Center, where they say, you know what, I have this idea for this really cool application, or I want to start my own business, but have no clue how to do that, and we'll be able to help them, you know, do that. So they'll actually, they can start their job here, they can grow their job here, they can expand. And I just really believe that over the next, you know, decade plus, we could really truly be the technology hub for the Midwest.
I think that would be excellent, and it's a good balance. Nothing against warehouse jobs, but you really have to have an economic balance there too. For people who are perhaps doubters, that'll just kind of happen that way. One of the examples, I think, are the markets and how many small businesses started by being in Harbor Market and then spun off, learn more about business, and became more of a brick and mortar business. So that, in a way, that's what you're hoping will happen with these tech jobs, is that they'll learn something, they'll start something, and then be able to spin off on their own.
Absolutely. Again, you go back to KELA, the former Brown Bank building.
Yes.
That, if you look at what we're doing there with the Teen Tech Center, with a we have a partnership with Best Buy, you know, who's helping to teach coding. So again, you know, those are the kind, you know, again, 10 years ago, you never would have thought maybe that was something to do. But now when you're looking at it, again, those are the areas where we need the expertise. And that's why you look at why we have so many, you know, folks like Snap-on, Jockey, Uline, who are like going, hey, you know, we need to train the next generation of employees so that they have the skills and tools to be able to, you know, compete in a global market. And so, we're providing them those tools and training, you know, there, so that they can actually apply those skills and actually, you know, be the next generation of employees that we need. There is a huge deficit, you know, in this country overall, not just Kenosha, with fulfilling, you know, jobs. And so it's something, again, some of it is just not having the proper training and tools to do what they need to do. So some of those jobs go overseas. We need to do our part to keep them here.
Talk a little bit about the partnerships, because, again, as an alderman, you were aware of it and probably involved in some of the negotiations and approval. But what is the city's role, and who are some of your partners in these entities, the KELA and with KIN?
So with KELA, in fact, we just at the last council meeting, that was that last Monday, we approved the all of the lease agreements, because they're all going to have a place in KELA, a lot of them. Gateway, KUSD, are all going to have their own areas within the KELA to help, again, facilitate their programs and training of these young people and the various skills and tools they need. Then with KIN, again, I think what the right approach we did is city can't manage that. It's, you know, cities have a certain function. You know, we can help, you know, with infrastructure. We can, you know, help assemble groups, which I think we've done a great job of. But then we turn it over to, you know, somebody that actually knows what they're doing. So that's why we established a 501c3. There was established and a whole board that will be running the operations there. Now, the city has a person on there, Tim Casey, who's our director of city development, sits on the board. But now they've actually gone out and then hired an executive director. And she comes with vast experience from the Green Bay area and has a really solid background that I think is going to actually help market that site and continue to bring in the quality developers and quality partners that we're going to need to not just to go beyond the two buildings that were already there, but also some of the other areas that we want to do. Because you really want, again, you want to make that an area where it's envisioned as a work, live, and play, where you can work there, you can live there, and there's other activities and things to do there. And I know some people have chuckled when I've said that because they say, wow, it's 109 acres. It's just a blank area in the middle of the city. Well, they probably said that about 100 years ago too. And then look what happened. And so I kind of look at this as we're doing the same thing now that our forefathers did over 100 years ago. So I think it's very exciting. I've been spending the bulk of my time actually meeting with all of them to make sure that we're where we need to be, and I think we are, and we're on track. My task now is just to make sure that we're also taking care of the areas outside of the Kin. The Kin's going to obviously have their own board and do what they need to do. My job and our role as a city is making sure that we're also looking at the areas that surround, the multiple neighborhoods that surround the Kin, and making sure that, A, they're being maintained, the infrastructure is being taken care of, and we're providing affordable housing and quality housing for the folks in those areas. And I think that's really going to be key for that area to all be successful.
And you just transitioned to my next area, and that is housing. You've mentioned it now a number of times, and I think your comment about you put your house up on the market and it sold in like an hour and a half, it's just such a small inventory of homes, which means there needs to be more single-family homes. Yet, developers don't seem all that interested in providing them, I assume because of costs. Is that what you're hearing? Or
a lot of it is to deal with costs. As I said, I think with interest rates being a little bit higher than what – again, we were spoiled for a while. When you're looking at 2%, I don't know that was realistic long term. And so I think that spoiled a lot of us, myself included. So now they do need to come down a little bit more to make the development a little bit more advantageous, and where we can help, in some of that. So one of the things that we just met this morning, a couple hours with our development teams, is talking about, how are we going to start assembling some of these parcels that we have so that we can put together an RFP to go out to developers to say, okay, look, this is what we need to have. We need to have provide for affordable housing, quality affordable housing for our residents here in Kenosha. And so we're going parcel by parcel throughout the city. And there are literally hundreds of parcels. Some are buildable, some are not. And what we need to do in order to make those advantageous for a developer. So we're working on a program, putting together a program. I'm hoping that within the next 60 days we can have something to the council and to the city to review and comment on and look at, all within the guise of trying to make sure that we're providing that quality affordable housing for folks in some of these older neighborhoods, which I have walked during the campaign. I've knocked on thousands and thousands of doors. That's what's different about being running for mayor versus being an alderman, is you're going all over the city and you really get a better feel for some of the different things, and you hear from people. What are their concerns? What are the things that they want to see? And so a lot of these folks who are living in these neighborhoods are going, what can we do to help, build some homes on these vacant lots that we've either acquired, the county has acquired over the years, and so we can actually get them back into tax rolls, and then at the same time provide people with that American dream of owning their own home.
What are some of the alternatives to have that happen, especially if it's not like one big chunk of property, but like you say, parcel by parcel?
So we like this morning, we like I said, we went through parcel by parcel in various areas of the city and said, okay, you know, how do we break this up? Because we also want to make sure that it's manageable for developers, so we can get these done, in my opinion, as efficiently and fast as possible. Because again, when you look at the market, and I talk to realtors all the time, and they say, "Boy, if I only had a lot more inventory, I could sell, you know, these homes a lot faster." Because some people are ready to move, but they think, "I have nowhere to go." And so the more we can get on, you know, to help with that and help developers get there, I think we're going to be there. So, you know, our goal is start putting together RFPs for all of these vacant parcels that we have. And if we have to break them up into certain areas or certain segments, we can do that. Of course, you know, part of this is making sure that they are their homes that I think fit the neighborhood. And then at the end of the day, again, the number one goal is make sure that they are as affordable as they can be. And again, I know that I get asked, like, well, what's affordable? It's different for different people, but I think we can make sure that they are, you know, at a price that I think is reasonable. And well, I think that's going to take some discussion and working through with staff and folks out there. But I think we can do that.
There are a number of homes that are not necessarily in the greatest of condition, owned by landlords who are some less scrupulous than others. Mm-hmm. What kind of things can be done with that to turn that over to home ownership rather than have one person own 100 properties?
Well, one of the things we want to do is on these parcels is we want to deed restrict them so they can only be owner occupied, so they don't become a rental. I think that's truly the key to stabilizing those neighborhoods. And again, you know, renters are not bad people. They're your neighbors or your friends, they're folks you go to church with. It's, you know, but sometimes in some cases it can be a little bit more transient. The way you stabilize a neighborhood is, you know, you live there for, you know, 20, 25, 30 years. We don't see a lot of that turnover. You see people taking care of their property. So that's the ultimate goal with the parcels that we want to do. Now, on the flip side of that, you also have to make sure that you're also inspecting and managing the parcels that are already there, or the homes or mm-hmm. Properties that are already there. And so we're actually working on we're going to be putting out some information, because this is one of the first things that I did when I came in office. Is we are going to make sure that we are enforcing our code ordinances all across the board. And so our inspection staff has been working very diligently on enforcing code violations. We're up dramatically in the number of property violations that we have been going through. And again, it's all across the city. I don't care where you're at, whether that be tall grass and weeds, whether that be, you know, homes that are dilapidated. And again, from my standpoint, it doesn't matter if it's owner-occupied or a rental unit. Either way, you live in that neighborhood, you want to see that property maintained. And so that was a directive I gave our inspections team, and they have been out there very, very diligently since April, really kind of enforcing our codes and ensuring they have that. Now, the other side of that is, you know, we also want to provide assistance, because you know what? There are mm-hmm. people out there that also, you know, sometimes they're looking at it saying, either I either have to put food on the table, or I've got to get this porch fixed or get this roof fixed. And so part of the program that we're putting together has a rehabilitation of the property component to it, so that we can also then provide you know, support and assistance to those folks who, you know, might be making it, you know, it's not that they're doing it on purpose. They're just having to make difficult decisions, you know, around their family's kitchen table. And then they get a letter from the city saying, "Hey, you got to fix your porch." They want to do it, but, you know, some of them are struggling. And so we want to be able to help those folks as well. And so part of this program we're putting together, we'll have an assistance program as part of that.
That sounds great. I'm sure that's going to be well received. While we were talking, I was remembering an announcement a while back about Uline donating the $3 million to the city. How does that work into this whole housing scheme you're talking about?
Well, that's – be careful with the word scheme.
I was going to say that didn't sound right. I apologize for that, as the scheme of things.
So, yes. So, again, you look at it, and Liz Uline, who has been a major partner for us here in the city over the last decade or so, recognized that her businesses continue to expand, and she needs places for her employees. Now, we're not dedicating those for her. She just recognizing as, hey, in order for the city to continue to thrive, we have to have places for our people to live and not just Uline employees. And so she's donated $3 million. We're going to match that. We're also working with Senator Baldwin's office, who has been phenomenal in her support of the program. I actually had the opportunity my first week to go and present to her and her entire staff all the things that we're working on here in Kenosha and some of the programs we were actually thinking about doing, and this was one of them. And she has been very supportive of that, and so we'll see how that works out over the course of the next couple of months. But once we assemble all of those dollars, that will be able to help the with the construction costs. Great. But also help with the purchase price if we have those dollars to be able to essentially have a soft second mortgage to help offset the purchase price of the home. So that all comes together. That's all part of this whole plan that we're working on. And like I said, hopefully the next month or so, I'll be able to start having discussions with all the council members and make sure that they have ideas and they have things and needs they want to see in their particular districts and neighborhoods. And we want to make sure that program takes all of those into account before we roll it out.
It seems to me Habitat for Humanity had been a big part of all of this in the last number of years, in Wilson neighborhood in particular, more recently. Will they continue to be part of this process?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had the opportunity to tour a couple of the homes over across the street from Wilson School. And it is really transforming that neighborhood. When you look over, 10 years ago to where they are today, not just with Habitat, but some of the other home builders that are building single-family homes there, it has truly, I think, stabilized a large portion of the Wilson neighborhood. And it'll continue as we work with the Redevelopment Authority, our partners there, to continue to acquire more parcels there, some of the old fourplexes as they become available. And continue to build single-family homes, affordable single-family homes, in that neighborhood is only going to benefit the city overall.
Let's go back to some of the internal things in our last 4 or 5 minutes here. And surprises. It seems to me an alderman who's been up to date may not have had surprises, but like you said, whole different relationships, so you're learning different things. Anything stand out as like, oh.
Probably just the volume of calls, I think, of anything. You kind of get used to a certain cadence of things happen. You see it on social media, you get a phone call at home or an email, and hey, address it and you move on. But it's very different, when you're in the mayor's office and folks who are needing different things and needing help with a lot of different things. I find it important to go out and actually, see these things for myself and talk to the residents and find out what their concerns are and how I can help, how we as a city can help. And so I wouldn't say there's been a lot of surprises other than the fact that probably the volume of folks needing, some type of help is huge.
And I think it's fabulous that you're taking the time to go out and see it for yourself. But in the long run, that seems like it would be pretty tough to maintain. And as you're looking at the budget, are you looking at, and in general going forward, any kind of staffing changes? You don't have to say which ones. If there are things, of course, you can't talk about. But where are you seeing that you might have to put a little bit more attention to staffing?
Well, I definitely think in the inspections department probably may need some. And again, this is all, I don't want to speak for anybody right now, but just kind of overall, fire is probably one that it really comes to mind. With the changes and when the closing of KMH Hospital downtown really is not only hurting the citizens, but it's hurting our firefighters immensely. And so that is something that we're going to have to try to tackle and figure out. Standing up another med unit, an ambulance.
Right.
I think that is now it's something that we're already looking at. So I definitely think that's something we're going to have to do. I think if you look at in the city clerk's office, from elections and how many different things we have to do there. And some of the changing things that are going on with that. We've got a huge election, obviously, coming up in November. That's putting in a lot of pressure on our clerk's office. And so, you know, those are a couple of things that I've noticed. Again, unfortunately, it doesn't mean that that's what we're going to do. But I can, just after the first, month or so, those are some of the areas where we're going to have to do some things differently, I think, long term.
It does make sense. I have to admit, I'm one of those who lives way east, and the idea of trying to live long enough to get to a hospital on the far west side and not have enough well-trained paramedics on board to get to me is something that frightens me. So thank you. I'm glad you're looking at that.
Yeah, it is definitely something. I said it during the election. I was asked at a debate. Might have been like the gateway debate as what keeps you up at night, and quite frankly, it's the loss of that hospital and the services that provides. I will tell you, my first meeting that I had, my first day in office was with a number of folks, doctors, some other professionals, about some ideas on how do we fix this problem, because it's that serious. And so since then, I've had a couple more. Don't know if we're ready for anything at this point, but our staffing levels have got to be at a point where we can handle, because we're just seeing a huge increase in the number of med calls, and there are times when we may have all of our med units out and not have any service, and we're relying on our mutual aid agreements with Pleasant Prairie and Summers and other folks, and that's not the way we want the system to run. Again, we didn't create the problem, but we're going to have to try to help figure out, facilitate a solution to the problem.
As far as your personal passions, you've mentioned a lot of things that you're picking up on, you're changing, you're moving forward with. But going into, I'm going to be mayor one day, and what I'd really like to do is, now that you are mayor, what do you really hope you can focus on if you had the time and the money?
don't give a mayor or a politician an open checkbook. It could be a lot. I think one of the things is, again, you look at the technology that we're doing. I think that is it's been something that's really bothered me for a long time. And I know it might not be as cool as standing up another med unit or hiring some employees, but we're already working on that right now. And that's a huge endeavor, making things as efficient as possible for our employees and our citizens is how I do that. I want, when I'm done, whatever that is, I want people to say, you know what, it is easy to do business in Kenosha. It is easy to navigate and get things done, and it's a fun place to be. And I think that's something that, as I look at, we talk about Ken and we talk about Keela. The excitement level for me is that, 20 years, 30 years from now, I think we have the ability to, the next iPhone may come out of the city of Kenosha, that some young person who just has this passion and this idea was raised here, got training here, developed an idea here, cultivated it, started a business, employed some people. And now they're on the cusp of being the next Bill Gates. That to me is an exciting opportunity that I think we have here. There's a lot of things we need to do cooperate with have that happen. But I think we've got the right pieces in place in order to make that happen.
Well, thank you so much. I learned so much from, and glad I had an opportunity to meet you and hear your great ideas and what you've been doing. And we have been talking to Kenosha Mayor David Bogdala on Community Matters, and I'm Jane Herring.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine.